Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, December 15th. Here's what Mitch McConnell said in a speech on the Senate floor just since we went on the air. Are you ready? This is a transcription from the New York Times. Many of us hoped that the presidential election would yield a different result, but our system of government has processes to determine who will be sworn in on January 20th. The Electoral College has spoken. So today, I want to congratulate President-elect Joe Biden. He hadn't done that before. He hadn't recognized the presidential election. He was keeping mum and tacitly supporting President Trump's claims of fraud. He also congratulated Senator Kamala Harris, referring to her as the vice president-elect. He said, beyond our differences, all Americans can take pride that our nation has a female vice president-elect for the very first time. Notably, though, the majority leader did not directly address Trump's continued and baseless allegations of widespread voting fraud, or what the Times calls fantastical claims that he had won the election by a wide margin. Instead, Mr. McConnell effusively praised the president for his 4 years of service, spending several minutes listing what he said were important achievements in domestic and foreign policy before he ever mentioned Mr. Biden's name. But nonetheless, Mitch McConnell has now said President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris for the first time, and so it further marginalizes Trump's baseless claims. There it is. And segueing from the last segment, if businesses are increasingly shutting down again and people are increasingly out of work long term, the next thing that we can't stop focusing on, even if the politicians stop focusing on it, is COVID relief. And we know Congress has been stalled for months and there is a Christmas cliff. Maybe we should call it a Kwanzaa cliff because many current COVID benefits expire on December 26th. And with us now to talk about that and Mitch McConnell's statement and more is Long Island Congresswoman Kathleen Rice, Democrat from New York's 4th Congressional District, that's south of the LIE, roughly from Mineola down through Garden City and Hempstead and down to the ocean, including Long Beach and around there. Congresswoman, always good to have you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Your reaction to Mitch McConnell?
It's about time. I mean, I have just been so disgusted, Brian, with the behavior of my colleagues, Republican colleagues in the House, time and time again, from Rudy Giuliani to all the other, you know, attorneys that the Trump campaign hired to go into courts, primarily in the states, you know, the states like, you know, battleground states, to go in and claim that there was fraud. They stood outside on the courtroom steps and claimed all of these crazy fraud theories, and then would go into court and be asked by a judge, give us the evidence, and they would admit that they had no evidence. They even went so far as to go to the Supreme Court, who just summarily dismissed their claim. But 126 Republican members of Congress had signed on to that Texas lawsuit to overturn the results in four other states. I mean, it's just a ridiculous, ridiculous claim. Do I wish that Mitch McConnell had done this earlier? Yeah. I wish there was some Republican with a backbone to say what everyone knows, whether you supported Trump or not, that this was a free and fair election and Trump lost fair and square, and that there is zero evidence to support his claims of widespread fraud. So I am hoping that now that McConnell has finally said the obvious, that other of his colleagues will follow suit.
It also means there isn't going to be any drama on January 6th. There may be some histrionics from members of the House primarily and maybe a few senators, but there's not going to be any drama in terms of whether Congress will accept the Electoral College results, which is the one final step that needs to take place. McConnell certainly guaranteed that today. I mean, it was guaranteed anyway because the House is Democratic majority and it would take both houses of Congress to reject the Electoral College. So it was already sealed. But now you know, there's really not going to be any drama. As Jim Acosta, the CNN White House correspondent, said on TV last night, given all the Republicans who are now coming out and recognizing Biden's election, he said Trump is just going to keep saying the election was rigged and he won in a landslide until nobody's paying attention anymore.
Well, hopefully. I mean, look, I understand what it's like to lose. I understand. I know people, right? I have some people very close to me who supported President Trump. And I know what it's like when your candidate loses. It's not a good feeling. But we have to move on. If this democracy is going to last and we're going to persevere, we have to just acknowledge that, yes, there is disappointment in losing an election. But from the very beginning, you remember, Brian, that Trump said the only way we are going to lose is if this election is rigged. And that's just not true. Trump got 10 million more votes than he did back in 2016. But guess what? Joe Biden got even more. There's no question that he won the popular vote and the electoral vote and the electoral college vote. So my hope is just that we can get more Republicans. I mean, you had Paul Mitchell say, I'm leaving the Republican Party because I can't take what they're doing, what they've become, that it is just this cult of one, Donald Trump. And we have to just move past this. And, you know, I thought that what President-elect Biden said yesterday is very true. He said it really strongly, that we just need to get past this. And whether you supported me or not, I'm going to be a president for you. And that's the kind of rhetoric that we need to embrace on both sides of the aisle.
For people who don't know your background, you're a former Nassau County DA, so you're a prosecutor. And I can only imagine that you thought, as a prosecutor reading the Trump lawsuits with a legal eagle's eye, that they were insane. And you must be proud of the judicial branch in front of which you used to practice. And I think this is really important to say, that a main institution of democracy, the judicial branch of government, along with a lot of state-level elected Republican officials, held together against the tribal onslaught of populist authoritarianism. Because we could tell throughout the entire Trump presidency that he would establish himself as a post-democracy authoritarian leader if he could. And he stress-tested the entire system over these last weeks and months, and we see what held. It didn't take civil war in the streets. It didn't take even mass protests in the streets. It took the judicial branch of government and the state legislative branch of government and some Republican governors just having a bottom line. Trump has no bottom line when it comes to his own power, but some Republican elected officials at the state levels, ones who matter, who lead state legislatures in Republican majority states, and courts, including 38 Republican appointed judges, according to the Washington Post count, held the line between truth and power.
And especially looking at the Supreme Court, where Trump, in an unprecedented fashion, had three appointments, and they joined and said, no go, this is no good. We're not even going to consider this case. If you look, this is what I have been talking about, especially given, as you said, Brian, my law enforcement background. I mean, we all know how, you know, countries devolve into authoritarian rule. And it is a methodical attack on first the free press, calling them the enemy of the people, which is what Trump said from the very beginning. Then it's the deep state that's embedded in every federal agency and our intel agencies. And then it's the court, and they have no backbone, and, you know, anytime they rule against them, they're a terrible, terrible branch of government. I mean, it has been methodical, and there are historical references to look at the kind of rhetoric that this president has engaged in for 4 years and the constant onslaught. And but our institutions have survived, and the courts have said, no, Mr. President, we are an independent branch of government. Now, it doesn't help that Mitch McConnell basically sold the Senate and thereby the entire Congress, because whatever we passed in the House, Brian, went to Mitch McConnell's office to die. He basically said to the president, you are right. I'm going to give you the control of the Senate. None of us are going to say anything against you. You want to pass this tax cut for rich people and corporations, we're gonna support you. You want to call this pandemic a hoax, we're right behind you. And thankfully, there were institutions that didn't sell out. And that is what gives me hope, that the rule of law still matters. People recognize that it is not fair that the president and his friends who get sick with COVID get a cocktail of medical treatment that is not available to anyone else. They don't like the fact that his friends get all of the tax breaks when middle-class families and poor people are bearing the brunt of it. So I'm very hopeful that President-elect Biden is going to be able to bring us all together, because the bottom line is we are all Americans. We are not Democrats or Republicans. We're Americans, and we should stand for that and reject any of this authoritarian rhetoric that is just going to take us down a very treacherous path.
Let me ask you this then. And my guest is Congresswoman Kathleen Rice, Democrat from Long Island. You have a politically mixed district, and many people voted for Trump. National surveys show most Republicans, at least until last week, had continued to believe the election was stolen despite the absence of evidence. And in a way, that's even more troubling than whatever Donald Trump himself does, because we can write Trump off as a narcissistic con man, but then all these regular people buy it. How much do you see it in your district, and how do you understand it?
I mean, I see it in my district, absolutely. There's no question. I mean, look, I in order for me to win, I have to, just as my background, I grew up, as you know, Brian, in a Republican household in Garden City, Nassau County, very Republican county in those days. But I have always been an elected official for all people, regardless of what their political parties are. So I think that I enjoy support amongst independent and Republican supporters that maybe some other Democrats in this hyper-partisan time would not enjoy. And I don't take that for granted. I represent my constituents to the best of my ability. I think the bigger issue here, because you are right, at some point Trump is going to leave. Who knows what kind of clown show he's going to have in the future, if he's going to start his own TV station or just go try to maximize his 4 years in the White House. We have to address the issue of disinformation and misinformation that didn't start with Donald Trump. He manipulated it and used it to his advantage. But because we have so many, you know, we don't have just ABC, NBC, and CBS anymore. I remember the days when the TV had to get up from the couch and actually turn a dial to look at one of 13 stations. People are getting their information from so many different sources and platforms, and that is what is so disturbing. And, you know, social media plays a large part in that. And I will say that we as a Congress have not done enough to hold social media companies responsible for the information that they allow to be put on their platforms. Because, you know, when I talk to people and say, well, where are you getting your news? They're not saying CNN, MSNBC. They're not even saying MSNBC or Fox. They're talking about OAN. They're talking about all these different platforms, some of which you've never even heard of. And they're parroting these crazy disinformation, misinformation, things like QAnon. That is something that we have to get a hold on, because, you know, it's a big enough problem domestically, but it is through social media platforms that bad state actors like, you know, Russia and Iran manipulate the American psyche and feed this disinformation to a point where people are doubting the very foundations of our democratic society. And that is what we have to get at the heart of.
And we're not going to go down this rabbit hole today of the media, but it's a mixed bag. I don't pine for the days of just three major television networks in this sort of centrist, you know, establishment, white male, even if a little liberal-leaning place, having a monopoly on the news. It's good that there are a million media outlets on one level, but then it also leaves people vulnerable to ones that are really disinformation platforms.
And Brian, if I could just throw in
role
also,
in that. And so, you know, obviously complicated discussions that we'll continue having.
But and I agree with you, Brian. I'm not saying that we should go back to just having three sources of information for the public, but there has to be a level of responsibility for journalists, right? For instance, I am a new Dem. I'm a moderate Democrat, right? You can't get anyone to be interested in me talking about working across the aisle with my Republican counterparts to work on legislation that's going to make life better here. All they want to hear from are the far left and the far right. And you give a megaphone to the far left and to the far right, and it manifests this or creates this division in this country that you're either far left or far right. And there's no one in the middle who just wants to get stuff done. If Joe Biden is going to be a successful president, he's going to have a successful administration, which I believe he will. He is going to maximize his relationships that he has with people in the Senate and the House. And he's going to do it in a bipartisan way. You know, the days of like Democrats being in control and just passing Democratic supported legislation or Republicans doing the same, though that legislation never lasts. And you just go through these cyclical moments, and it doesn't, you don't have long term fundamental systemic change in this country. So if we want legislation that's going to last and stand the test of time, we have to do it in a bipartisan way. But I do believe there should be responsibility.
So you tee up a clip from Biden that I wanted to play anyway, from his speech yesterday. After he gave evidence about the election result, he promised to reach out across the political divide.
You know, in this battle for the soul of America, democracy prevailed. We, the people, voted. Faith in our institutions held. The integrity of our elections remains intact. And now it's time to turn the page, as we've done throughout our history, to unite, to heal. As I said in this campaign, I will be president for all Americans. I'll work just as hard for those of you who didn't vote for me as I will for those who did.
And as a radio person, I can sympathize with Joe Biden having to clear his throat at just the wrong moment.
Absolutely.
Yes. But to your point, Congresswoman, people say it's about tribes, but I think it can be about policy. Many Republicans felt the Obama administration did not take their needs into account, whether fairly or not, and felt that Trump did, whether on social issues or his economic nationalism, and whether you think they were good policies or not. But what do you see as the policy priorities that separate Republicans, let's say in your district, from Democrats, where Biden could actually say, look, I'm taking your problems into account and solving your problems, but I'm also taking my constituents' problems into account and solving their problems?
You know, that's a good question. I think that it's going to be, there's a dual track, right? There is how is a Biden administration going to handle international issues and us rejoining the international community as one tact? And the other from a much more domestic base. And coming, he is going to have the very difficult task of coming out of a pandemic that none of us have ever seen in our lifetime. And so my hope is, and I believe that, you know, the more Biden talks about these issues of reconciliation and unifying the country, I think it's going to be critically important what piece of legislation is the first major piece of legislation the Biden administration tries to pass. I know it will be a bipartisan effort because that's what President Biden is going to want, but how does he address, how does he say I'm addressing the needs of the people who supported me and even those who didn't? Look at the four states, right? Well, you have Georgia for the first time in how many years went and supported a Democratic presidential candidate, but look at Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, right? These are states that went for Trump by a much smaller margin in 2016, but went for Trump nonetheless, and voters who were traditionally seen to be Democratic voters. This is one of my issues with the Democratic Party, Brian. It's a discussion for another day. You know, how do we define our supporters? I think that we look at an antiquated view of who are traditional Democratic candidate supporters, but that's, again, as I said, another topic. Mm-hmm. I think that Joe Biden is uniquely positioned to address the concerns of people in those four states who 4 years ago were Trump supporters and say, I know that you supported Trump, but this is what we are going to do. We're going to put, I hope, a robust infrastructure package together. First thing, January 21st, that's going to also incorporate additional COVID relief. That's going to put people back to work. It's going to solidify our healthcare systems. It's going to keep small businesses in business. It's going to, you know, help repair our crumbling infrastructure all across the country. We saw that most blatantly with kids not even having access to broadband when they have to learn, do at-home learning. I mean, we have so much work to do just domestically. Forget about the international stuff. And I think that that is going to be a very unique opportunity for President Biden, President-elect Biden, to show that he means it when he says, I'm going to be a president for every single American, not just those who voted for me.
Democratic Congresswoman Kathleen Rice from Long Island, thank you for your time today. We'll keep having you on.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.